The Tom Woods Show, episode 2347.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. As the academic year winds down, it's time to start thinking about what you're going to do in the fall. And of course, I highly recommend the self-taught K through 12 Ron Paul curriculum. Not only will your kids get the real story about everything, but they'll also learn the kinds of practical things that they won't learn in the traditional school. For instance, how to be an effective public speaker, how to manage money, and how to run your own home business. And of course, when they reach the high school grades, they will be learning Western civilization and U.S. government from old Tom Woods here. But here's the most important thing. If you're going to join, make sure you join through my link, because only through my link do you get $160 worth of free bonuses. My link is ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. The great Ryan McMakin of the Mises Institute is with us. And Ryan, I should remember from the last time you were here what your title is, and now I forgot it again. So can you just tell me?
At the moment, it's executive editor.
Wow, executive editor. I don't know how much higher it gets in the editor world than that.
It's tip top. Actually, it's great. It just means I get to make more decisions about what goes on the website than before.
Nice, nice, nice. And, you know, by an interesting coincidence, I noticed an awful lot of content by a certain Ryan McMakin on the Mises Institute website.
Yes, I like to make my own contributions as well.
That's good. Very, very good. Well, that's actually why you're here. So the other side of that is you worm your way, whether or not it was intended, back onto the Tom Woods Show. So you've been talking about a whole bunch of interesting things. I just picked out three of them, and we're just going to let her rip. Okay?
Great.
All right. So the first one, I want to get out of the way because it bores everybody to death, but I still want to get your perspective on it before it disappears completely from everybody's consciousness. I do want to visit it one more time. And that is, I don't care about the details of the agreement that was reached with Kevin McCarthy and Biden and all that. Details of that are of no significance. But what is of significance is some of the arguments that were used about why this or that should be done, or they need to hurry up and reach an agreement because we can't let the U.S. default, and the U.S. has never defaulted before. Default would be a disaster and all that. That's what I want to address. Before we get into that, I do want to tell you, I had David Stockman on last week, and he was willing to meet the other side on their terms and say, even on your terms, whereby you say default would be a terrible thing if we didn't make good on the interest payments that were owed to bondholders, that would be the worst thing. He says, the thing is, there's no reason for that to happen because even according to the left liberals, according to Lawrence Tribe, the dean of left liberal American jurisprudence, he said years and years ago that what Obama should do in a situation like this, if no agreement was reached, was that he could prioritize the money coming in and direct it to the most urgently needed outlets, namely satisfying the debt service payments. You wouldn't even have to have a default. The president and the Treasury Secretary can simply take the incoming money, which is vastly more than would be necessary to service the debt, and just prioritize the servicing of the debt. So even that is just a scare tactic that is not real. But you, being a radical libertarian, take it to you turn it up all the way up to 11 and say, well, you don't quite say bring it on, baby, but there are some of us who are not quite as concerned about the credit rating of the United States of America. I think it could stand to lose a few notches. But what was your overall take on all this?
Yeah, I mean, so much of it was really just trying to hold the country hostage. If you don't just do whatever we say and give us as much money as we want and let us run up debts as high as we want, well, the earth will fall into the sun and the economy will collapse. And if the reality was, as you say, even then, as Secretary Liu in later years has been admitted several times publicly, well, they would just make the debt payments the most non-discretionary of non-discretionary payments and just make those payments before anything else. The downside to the regime in these cases is that, oh, we can't give as much money now to Medicare and Medicaid and to the military and to all of these different special interests that want federal money, money from the taxpayers, and we would have to actually cut back on that. And they don't want that to happen. They don't want to have to make those decisions. So, of course, they just freak out if there's any chance that there might be some sort of cap even temporary, put on federal funding. So that's what the real game was. And then in my article from, it looks like the 23rd, May 23rd, I was just looking at some of the myths that they were using to push through this. And one of them, of course, was that, oh, these hard-nosed Republicans, they're playing hardball because they just want to slice spending. They want to cut things back to the bone. They want to force us into an austerity position. You can't let them win. It was never a fight over cutting any real spending. So that was just complete nonsense. It was only ever a fight over who gets how much. So we don't want the Pentagon to get as much as the Republicans want them to give. That was the only real debate. They were never going to cut spending, and that's never been a real option. Oh, yeah, McCarthy's all bragging about, oh, look, we're going to cut things next year by $40 billion, which is, of course, just a tiny drop in the bucket. And you shouldn't even believe that, because by the time they add in some emergency funds for Ukraine and all that, it's going to be more spending this year than last year. So just get it out of your mind that there's any spending cuts actually happening. And the other issue was, has the U.S. ever defaulted? Boy, this was a lie they repeated about a million times, which you would get Yellen go on TV, you would get Biden go on there, and they would couch it in this moralistic stuff, like, we're not a deadbeat nation, we always pay our debts, as if these people think that paying off your debts is somehow, like, really important. The ruling class never pays its debts. It gets someone else to pay it. That's why they always get bailed out by the central bank and by the taxpayers. But the reality is they have defaulted, of course. They defaulted after the Revolutionary War, where they're like, oh, yeah, we'll pay you back after, like, 10 years, but in the meantime, we won't make any payments. And then, they renegotiated paybacks on, like, the Continental credits, all at, of course, much reduced rates, like, I don't know, like 60 cents on the dollar, that sort of thing. And then there was an 1862 default during the Civil War. And then the big one that everyone should remember was in 1934, after Roosevelt takes the U.S. off the gold standard, which, of course, was its own sort of default. He then tells people who had bought Liberty bonds during World War I, oh, we're not actually going to pay these back in accordance with the contract. The contract said we would pay you back in gold, or at least something that was directly convertible to gold. And instead, we're just going to give you this new paper money that we've created at this new random value of gold that we set. But if you're a domestic owner of those bonds, you can't even get that, because only foreigners can get gold anymore. So it was just talk about being a deadbeat. You helped give the government money to win World War I, and then they just decide, oh, yeah, we're not going to make good on that. So they have defaulted before, and they will default again at some point. And none of this is even counting the whole, hey, we're devaluing the currency, so we're paying back the debt in devalued dollars. So if once you count that, then it's clear to see that, yeah, there's nothing moral here in terms of paying back what's owed. The federal government has been a deadbeat. It is a deadbeat. It'll be a deadbeat again. So let's just stop acting like there's some sort of issue here about holding to our contracts and doing what we said we were going to do. To be lectured like this by Yellen and Biden is really just kind of embarrassing.
Well, I told Stockman that even as important as this issue is, I just can't bring myself to be interested in it anymore, because I've realized as I've gotten older that there really is no present company accepted, like people listening right now, there really is no constituency for bringing our, quote, fiscal house in order. There really isn't. And if there is, it's not anywhere near as powerful as the we want to take your money constituency. We want checks with our names written on them constituency. That's way, way too big and powerful and entrenched. And so I kind of expect this outcome, which is why I don't find it interesting. And everybody, we get the drama queening all the time, every single time, about doomsday scenarios that never come true. And that's it. And then we go right back to the way things were. I can't bring myself to care. Who cares now? I mean, I care in the sense that I want things to be better, but I don't care in the sense that I refuse to be manipulated by the politicians and reporters when I know what the outcome is going to be. I know what the end is going to be. You know, it's kind of like if I were watching a detective movie, like an old detective movie where there are never any twists and turns. It's always the detective finds the guy and that's it. Right. It would be like people coming to me 3/4 of the way through this movie saying, you know, he might not catch him. But, you know, the thing is, I've seen a lot of detective movies. He always catches him, you know?
Yeah, if you were bamboozled into thinking there was going to be some outcome where they shaved $1 trillion off our $6.5 trillion budget, you were really gullible and you got played. I didn't even expect, as I'm sure you didn't, I didn't even expect them to go back to pre-2020 sorts of budgets. That's something that they never mentioned, is that the budget now, just compared to 2 years ago before COVID, is $2.2 trillion larger. That's the new base. That's the new foundation. So any increases we're looking at, it's going to be above already that $2 trillion humongous increase that occurred in 2020. No one's talking about even a return to quote unquote normalcy, which was a mere $4.5 trillion federal budget with a mere $1 trillion deficit. We're now looking at much huger numbers, and Kevin McCarthy is not going to be returning to that. And you got to be super dumb to think that's even on the table.
All right, let's go on to the next of my three things. The next of my three things, I haven't told you in advance what these are. These are a kind of surprise, but I've chosen them from things you've been writing about, so they're not entirely surprised. So the second one, I haven't talked about at all, which is the Bud Light boycott and then what's been going on with Target and stuff like that. What's been interesting about this, I mean, I think most people know about this, but there are probably some people, because I think about 20% of my listeners actually are outside the U.S., and they might, you know, they probably live more peaceful lives not following the minutiae of cultural news in the U.S., but there was a boycott of Bud Light because Bud Light made a commemorative can for this quote-unquote Dylan Mulvaney, who is obviously a man dressed up as a woman. I mean, that's, look, we all know that's what's happening here. We're supposed to pretend otherwise, but we obviously know that that's what's happening here. But he's a particularly obnoxious person pretending to be a woman because he thinks being a woman means you wear high heels and you talk like an airhead and you're really goofy and you run around and be frivolous and silly. And why more women aren't insulted by this, I have no idea, but I'm not going to stand up for them if they don't care. You know, I stand up for decent women who really are offended by this, but most of them don't seem to really care, apparently, that they're being insulted 24 hours a day by this guy. But anyway, this was apparently just, it was a bit too far for some people. Because I think what the response was, we get it. The people who run things around here don't like regular Americans at all. And they want to rub in their faces that they don't like them and that they're powerless and that ideas that they don't approve of are going to be smushed in their faces forever. And they just finally said, you know, we're just tired of this. We haven't done anything to deserve this. We really don't bother these people one way or another. We really don't. Honestly, we don't. We're just trying to live. And everywhere we turn, it's a reminder that it's not enough. We have to have opinions different from the ones we hold. So I guess they just said, well, we're just not buying this beer anymore. And you think, well, things like this never really last very long because the will to persist in them is not strong enough. And because only the left seems to ever get what it wants and persist in something. But this has really actually done some harm. Heads have rolled. The company has extremely clumsily tried to run really pro-America ads, which are only making it worse because that just reminds you of this other thing. I mean, they have lost tens of billions of dollars in value. What's your assessment of all this? And it's not always true, by the way, they say, go woke, go broke. That's not always true because most companies are woke. They're not all broke. What do you think? Why did the dam burst here?
Yeah, let's be crystal clear that go woke, go broke is probably not even true 50% of the time. We see that happening all over the place. Part of the reason I wrote the articles, I wanted to look at why does it seem to be working this time? And I felt the world didn't need another just regular old culture war article about the whole phenomenon. Mises.org has a lot of economic content. So I kind of wanted to look at it from a more dispassionate economic perspective. And so why is this working? Why is the management at Anheuser-Busch so clueless and so apparently not concerned with losing money? So a lot of those issues are really quite interesting when you start looking at how all of that works. And yeah, it is one of those few cases where they have lost a lot of money. And what was it about the Dylan Mulvaney thing that got people so worked up about it? I think it was just what you said. It's just so over the top, annoying, and so shove it in your face sort of thing. Because of course, every product you use, they put a rainbow on their logo in June, almost everything. And what is it about Bud Light? Well, part of the reason is that, well, Bud Light and Anheuser-Busch, they've just been really kind of doubling down on hiring this new generation of Ivy League educated, basically born into wealth, white people who a huge part of their identity is really just pushing what overeducated white people like, which these days is the whole LGBT thing. And they showed very, very little concern for their core audience of Bud Light, which was more ordinary people, working class people. The only person I remember who drank a lot of Bud Light was my great uncle back in Indiana. So, I mean, he was a carpenter. So that kind of tells you who for many decades their core audience was. And so then they had this woman, Alyssa Heinerscheid, who went to like a private boarding school and then on to Harvard and then an MBA. And they made it personal. I think that's part of the reason why I was successful too. They showed this woman and she was going on and on about how basically stupid regular men are and we got to move away from that. So she's just out and out insulting their core audience. So I think that got a lot of these people really worked up about it. It was just the straight up in your face insulting nature of it beyond just, hey, we're going to pander to this one group you may not like for a while, but otherwise we're fine with everybody. That wasn't how Bud Light was doing it. They were basically picking people they hated and people they liked. So they did. They lost, well, boy, they've lost at least 15, it looks like over 20 something billion dollars in capitalization right now. And so, yeah, stock price is going down significantly. And if it doesn't look like it's going down that much, compare it to like Molson Coors or one of their competitors, which is continuing to see sizable increases. So I kind of like the whole phenomenon just because one of my pastimes is like PR implosions. I like it when people just kind of like on the internet completely nuke themselves. It's just kind of fun to watch. So I've paid attention to the whole thing just for that. And Bud Light's clearly been doing that. And it's been benefiting other brands, which I think is great. It's been great for Yingling. It's been great for Pabst Blue Ribbon, which it turns out is its own company. I just assumed it was owned by one of these huge conglomerates, but it's not. And I think it's great that those other brands are starting to get a chance when Bud Light is just obviously such a mediocre brand and has been built on for years on this like pseudo-patriotism thing. But there are some other specific issues to this as to why Get Woke, Go Broke actually applies to the Bud Light thing. And there's lots of good Austrian analysis in here because Bud Light, or rather light beer, more so than many products, is really purely subjective. Now, valuation's always subjective at its fundamental level. But when it comes to light beer, it's on even softer stuff, right? Like some products can claim, like Volvo, oh, we're unusually safe and we have studies to prove it. Well, Bud Light cannot prove that it's the better tasting beer or anything like that. And taste tests have shown that all light beer basically tastes the same. There's some differences, slight, but it's just not a big deal to switch from one to the other. So there's that. So Bud Light was banking, their whole reputation is based on those horses and camouflage colored cans and all support the troops and all of that sort of middle America patriotism stuff. And they just spit on that. So now they can't just say, well, we're still the best tasting beer because nobody really thinks that. And then there's the fact that it only takes a minimal amount of effort to switch to a competitor. So you're standing there in the supermarket or the liquor store. Which beer do I take? All you have to do is turn your head slightly to the left or right. You can see the competitor. It's about the same price and you pick it up.
Right. Yeah. It's not like in the old days, like switching between Dish Network and DirecTV, like a guy had to come out to your house or something like that. It was a big ordeal. You just, I'll just stick with the one I have.
Right.
As you say, this is like nothing.
Yeah. It's so easy. And that's why I always just roll my eyes when people say they're going to boycott the NFL or Major League Baseball or something over the woke thing. I'm like, no, you're not. Your entire Sunday daily ritual is built around this. You're not giving it up. And they never do because there isn't a real easy competitor for NFL on Sundays or going to the ballpark in the afternoon with your family. They just slavishly keep doing it. They just slavishly keep watching movies that are written to pander to China. And they say they hate it, but the American lacks the fortitude to give up products that he's become used to sitting around and eating or consuming in some way. So I think that's why Bud Light has really suffered here. It was just too easy to get rid of it. And so I just really wanted to look at Bud Light from that perspective. And yeah, we could all agree the LGBT thing is dumb and I am happy to participate in the boycott because, hey, why not send a message to Bud Light that they're being stupid? But I didn't really drink their product anyway. But hey, if it humiliates some MBAs, some people who smugly look down their noses on ordinary Americans from their C-suite, fine. Fine with me.
Let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Omaha Steaks. Father's Day is here. You got to hurry up and get him a great gift because if you wait too long, it's going to be another pair of socks and another number one dad t-shirt. Dad deserves better than that. And you and I know dads want steaks. Your dad will be the envy of your neighborhood if you get him what he really wants. And that is the dad's favorite gift package from Omaha Steaks. So for a limited time, when you go to omahasteaks.com, enter code WOODS into the search bar, you'll be able to order that dad's favorite gift package for just $99.99. Plus, you'll get 8 free Omaha Steaks burgers with your order. Save over 60% on the dad's favorite grill pack, and you will get 4 bacon-wrapped fillets, 4 delicious boneless chicken breasts, 4 boneless pork chops, 4 gourmet jumbo franks, 4 made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets, and an Omaha Steaks seasoning. Plus, the 8 free Omaha Steaks burgers, all for just $99.99. We in the Woods household have been enjoying Omaha Steaks for probably a dozen years. You will love them too. So don't wait. Go to omahasteaks.com, type Woods into the search bar, and order the dad's favorite gift package for Father's Day today. That's omahasteaks.com, keyword Woods. All right, let's go on to the third thing. The third thing is the FBI. And you have written on this. Now, I did an episode with Jacob Hornberger called Abolish the CIA. And as I've had more and more episodes, my episode titles have gotten longer because I'm doing sometimes more specific things. So it was very satisfying to have just a 3-word episode title, Abolish the CIA, because that's also very attention grabbing. Well, I guess you're arguing for abolishing the FBI, and we can make a very good case for the corruption of the FBI, and perhaps we should do that. But at the same time, you can imagine even a reasonable person saying, but don't we need some kind of interstate coordination of law enforcement? And doesn't the FBI fit that bill so that even if you did abolish it, wouldn't you wind up just replacing it with another thing that coordinates interstate crime control?
Yeah, I've made this point in a couple of previous articles. And part of the reason my most recent article, which is from May 17th, called End the FBI, is I already had an article called Abolish the FBI.
Okay, good for you.
And I already had an article called Dismantle the FBI. So I just needed to whip out the thesaurus to figure out what would I title this new one? Because, yeah, they always do something horrible every couple of years, every 18 months, where you got to write an article that covers some new ground. And so, yeah, the original Abolish the FBI article, I looked at where does the FBI come from? And it was always this effort to really copy the Pinkertons. The Pinkertons were this private police force that did investigations of serious crime and crime rings and organized crime and all that sort of stuff. And they were called agents. And there's a reason FBI agents are called agents. It was an attempt to basically copy the Pinkertons and create this idea that they were these professional investigators, not police officers, and not even really part of the state somehow. And that then in the early 20th century became this whole idea of, oh, we're a more professional group. We wear suits and we're not beholden to the local police and party machinery. So there was an effort to villainize local politics and say the party machines, they all have corrupt cops, but we at the FBI, we are uncorrupted. We cannot be corrupted. So call us in and we'll solve your local crime problems. So that was always part of the messaging. But the reality, of course, is that they were never really necessary for crime fighting. And we can see that in other parts of the world, such as, Europe, where they have no continent-wide police force. They've got a bunch of national level, or what would be the equivalent of state level police forces here. And they do coordinate via Interpol and by some other basically software and communication services. And really in the modern times, they just have clearinghouses where they exchange data. Now, Interpol agents, they do not have arresting authority. They cannot come into your country and initiate investigation. So if what the country needs is some sort of agency that could help coordinate information among state agencies, that would be fine, but that doesn't necessitate any sort of federal police force. This was always a novelty that the Americans came up with, especially in a country that supposedly was composed of a bunch of sovereign states. So that's a 20th century invention. There's no authorization for it in the Constitution, of course. And it was horribly corrupt as soon as you started getting J. Edgar Hoover in there, who used it basically as a way to blackmail members of Congress that they would never cut his funding and do whatever he wanted. And they, of course, tried to get Martin Luther King to commit suicide. They spied on people left and right. It's always been a horrible organization, but they ran such effective propaganda that it wasn't really until recently that conservatives were always falling all over themselves to tell you how great the FBI is and how great the CIA is, by the way. But one of Trump's many accidental virtues is that he's really just exposed the FBI for how partisan it is and how the FBI is all about protecting the FBI. And so now there starts to be some real division among conservatives and among Americans in general in terms of, is the FBI any good, or is it just there to spy on you, to go after its own personal enemies? And many people are starting to see the light on it, but we'll see how well that lasts into the future.
Would you say that the FBI has been selective in its targeting of people? He asks innocently.
Well, right. That's another great thing that's happened just in the last few years, is it's become so blatantly obvious now, right? It's how they go after parents who make school board members feel uncomfortable, and they start surveilling those people. They don't seem terribly concerned when a Supreme Court justice's life and his family's lives are being threatened. But boy, they're going to pull out all the stops and spare no expense tracking down your granny who accidentally walked into the Capitol on January 6th. I mean, they will just not stop until all those people are absolutely destroyed. And we're talking about minor trespassers in most cases here. So you can obviously see how they've got a certain political axe to grind here, and they can't even help themselves, just how blatant it has become. How can we even argue anymore that the FBI isn't really the tool of whatever the administration is at any given time? But I think the reality is that it always tends to be the tool of the center-left administrations, because that's who has the closest connections to the permanent government in Washington. That is the deep state, the career, quote-unquote, law enforcement people who are in the FBI. They just have the deepest bonds with the Bidens and the Obamas, and any sort of outsider like Trump is simply not going to have that same sort of rapport or influence with them.
Well, I just saw, I can't remember. I probably even retweeted it, and I can't remember who the author was, but the person was saying something like, you naive idiots who thought, well, Trump hasn't committed any crimes, so they can't really go after him. And the person is saying, how naive can you be? That doesn't matter. They'll go after him anyway. I don't know. I mean, should we be quite that cynical that you can be absolutely 100% squeaky clean and yet not be safe in America? Is it really quite that bad?
Well, that gets us into the issue of just federal law and the federal courts overall. And I would say, yeah, at the federal level, you've probably committed some sort of felony, because there's so much stuff related to just violating copyrights, or you caught the wrong fish somewhere, or you said something online that was some sort of grievous violation according to some international treaty. And of course, who knows what rules you might have violated under the Internal Revenue Code. So if they just dig deeply enough, they can find something, and they've got the deepest pockets in the world, right? Unless you're a billionaire like Mark Cuban, you can't even really afford to defend yourself. So it's a scale. Who can pile the most money onto the scale? Whoever piles on the most money wins. Who's got the most money against normal people? Well, it's certainly the federal government. Regular people don't have anywhere near the resources that those prosecutors and FBI agents have. So I think Americans should be afraid that if they become perceived as an actual threat to the regime, that they would be targeted. Now, a lot of us, I think they just haven't decided that we're enough of a threat that they're going to go after us. And kind of my rule is, well, Lou Rockwell's still out of jail. He hasn't been prosecuted, so I'm probably fine.
Yeah,
and
right. Yeah.
I mean, some other people like that who are like, well, they're going to go after that person before they go after me.
Right. And so look, if Lou ever winds up in prison, but I'm still sitting here, then you can still say, all right, probably Woods, who's a little more out there, if he's still, if he's still
right.
Okay.
yeah, you have a bigger following. You're more famous. So yeah, that's the next domino to fall.
No, I think I might actually be a little bit farther down the rabbit hole, let's say. So more likely to get the old heave-ho.
Well, also, yeah, some of the topics you cover as well, more broad. So yeah, I mean, you're just giving these people ammunition. They're keeping track. They're keeping score. And all it requires is one person who just decides they hate you and have it out for you. Because as we've seen, right, they leak information selectively. They have personal enemies. If you're like the ex-girlfriend of an FBI agent, we've seen cases where these guys use their FBI power to torment women. I mean, it's just amazing the sort of power they have and what they can get away with.
Well, you mentioned the possibility that we might have committed a felony because there are just so many possible rules you could break without even realizing it. That, of course, calls to mind the book Three Felonies a Day by Harvey Silverglate. And I'm happy to say I had him on the show all the way back on episode 869. So the book is called Three Felonies a Day, How the Feds Target the Innocent. And I interviewed him, tomwoods.com/869. So that's not just something we made up. Like, that's, you know, that's, he
yes.
devotes himself as a lawyer to helping people out of these crazy situations.
That's just another way the whole federal system is stacked against you, is the FBI, their whole system of evidence gathering is not letting you record your conversations with the FBI. They take notes. They're seen as the really the official dispenser of what you have said and done in the course of the investigation. And that's why all these people that they can never actually nail anything on, they end up going to jail for making false statements, for saying something that the FBI later says is a lie. And it wasn't even said under oath. And so then they get later contradicted in court. They contradict themselves or something. Well, now you're suddenly guilty of some sort of federal crime. And it's similar to what we're seeing with what's being constructed against Trump in terms of these defamation lawsuits and some of those other non-crimes that he's being roped into. He's being prosecuted for things he said about crimes. They're like these derivative crimes. Whereas normal people in states, at the state level of criminal law, we all know that killing people, assaulting people, stealing, fraud, these are all real crimes. But once you start to get the federal legal system involved, first of all, they don't have to prove any sort of intent. Then they have all of these derivative crimes where you defamed somebody or you made some untruthful statement because of something that you heard third hand. I mean, it's just astounding at how far you can get away from anything you would consider to be a real sort of violent crime or theft, and you're still being accused of having committed something under a criminal code. So yeah, you don't even know what you're guilty of most of the time.
Tell us a little bit about, of course, we all know about the Mises Institute, but tell us about what you're doing over there these days, and in particular, what you and Tho Bishop do on a regular basis with your podcast.
Yeah, I've been forced to do more podcasts, which is not my my chosen medium, but they're popular. And so we end up
and
doing...
you're good at them. Why do you say that? You're good at them.
They turn out fine. And I'm glad you say that. I just like the precision of the written word rather than shooting from the hip. I'm always afraid I'm going to make a fool of myself is the problem.
Look, have you looked around American society lately? Nobody else is worried about that.
Maybe my standards are too high.
Yes.
You're right. That's a problem. With Tho, I've got Radio Rothbard, which you turn into. I also do a foreign policy podcast with Zach Yost called War Economy and State. And then I've started up a new one called Fed Watch, where every few weeks we will talk about the Fed, and we've got some economists that are slated to do that. So we have beefed up the podcast side of things, but mostly we're just trying to stay on top of what's going on with the economy these days, because people are fed so much BS about what's going on with jobs and the economy and what's causing the economic slowdown, which is likely to turn into recession by the end of the year, or what even is a recession? What are the ultimate causes of recession? And my great fear is that people will learn entirely the wrong lessons from the next financial crisis. And I think that's one of the main jobs of the Mises Institute, is that if you have an economic collapse, you have a major economic crisis, just a regular recession, a lot of people are going to come away from it thinking, well, the main problem was there wasn't enough socialism. There was too much capitalism. There wasn't enough regulation. And that's what all the mainstream sites are going to say. So we've got to at least be one of the voices out there saying, no, this is the real reason you're getting screwed over by your government and by the economy. And it certainly has nothing to do with there being too much capitalism.
Well, I hear you. I fought that battle for quite a few years in particular. So Mises.org is the website, of course, Mises.org. But I'm happy to see that now on the little bar at the top, the word podcast is there. So you can click on it and see all the different podcasts the Mises Institute has. But dear reader, there are so many. Please, I beg of you not to stray too terribly far from the Tom Woods Show that you've come to grow and love so much. But nevertheless, what the Mises Institute does is of the utmost importance, and I support it 100%. I always have, and I love to see it expand like this and to see all these offerings. It's great because we certainly do need it. There are a lot of voices out there, and most of them should be completely ignored. So the solution to that is more voices, and I'm glad to see that we're getting them. So thank you for that and for talking to me about all these things today.
Thank you, Tom.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.